Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, good evening, morning, afternoon, or, you know, whatever time of day it is that you're listening, because we are here once again with our wonderful podcast, Pubs, Pints, People, the camera podcast brought to you from the Campaign for Real Ale, Cider and Perry. Now this week, as it's the start of autumn, we're focusing on the cider harvest, and as ever, I'm joined by Matt and Claire. Hello, both.
Hi there.
Hello, hello. We've both got a bit of a sore throat, haven't we, Ant?
At time of recording, I'm in the middle of an all-week conference at my new place of work, and I've been doing a lot of talking, a lot of drinking, I'm not going to lie, but a lot of talking as well.
I think it's just the change of seasons. Everybody I know has got a cold. I've got it as well. You know, the kids bring it back. But, you know, a bit of mulled cider on the throat, that's my cure of choice, Ant.
Medicinal.
Medicinal, yeah. The doctor, yeah, I'm sure he was a doctor who handed it to me. You know, and looking back now, it's all a bit blurry. But
Dr. Fox.
That's true. Well, I'll tell you what, autumn is a wonderful time of year, isn't it? Apart from the colds that we get, it's a wonderful time. It's a wonderful time to be out. And as the evenings draw in, you know, it always makes me think of it. It makes me think of walking to the pub, you know, as the lights fade and that wonderful welcoming warmth and light when you open the door.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just a wonderful moment to go into a pub. And for me, I think I've talked about this before, I do love a roaring fire. A bit of a tradition is that, you know, I think if it's not quite cold enough actually yet, really, but I know some landlords are keen, and I've seen there's one burning in the grate at the local down in my town in Berkhamsted as well. And it just adds to that feeling that the pub is a really special place, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I saw a roaring fire in a pub just the other weekend as well, so that they are about. But the whole CAMRA, Campaign for Real Ale, as you know, organisation, is actually focusing on cider this month, because although it's not in the name, cider's also part of CAMRA's campaigning. And it's not just here on the podcast, but as October marks the second cider month of the year, if you want to get involved in CAMRA's cider month, you can find loads of activity. Just go to the website, it's camera.org.uk, search for all the cider activities, loads of things. The 16th of October, for example, the Pomona Award is being made for an outstanding contribution to the promotion of cider and perry. So look out for announcements on that. Pomona, of course, the name of the Roman goddess of orchards and apples, hence the award.
Yeah, I remember we had some cider sent to us from Little Pomona, didn't we, Matt, back a few seasons back? Absolutely delicious.
We did.
Now, CAMRA is a campaigning organisation. The first three letters suggest, and appropriately, there is a new campaign starting on cider duty later this month, on the 18th in fact. Now, you might remember from episode one that cider duty starts at 12,000 pints, so Matt's well under the threshold, and anyone producing less is completely exempt, huzzah! But that does account for 80% of producers. Now, the big but here is that as soon as you go over the limit, so to speak, everything gets taxed.
Indeed. Now, of course, CAMRA's campaigned to keep the current exemption that was under threat. But now, and I think what is a really good move, it wants to go further and turn it into a progressive duty. Because I mean, otherwise, it's easy to see why producers stay small, isn't it? Stay under that 12,000 pints limit. And I think we could be missing out on some really great cider and some fantastic small businesses that could go on to become medium-sized businesses make more money, can give more to the economy and more to the industry. And I think it's a real shame that the kind of this artificial side of duty limit stops that from happening. And the campaign that Cameron are doing will include a social media takeover, so watch out for that. There'll be a hashtag, I'm sure. I look forward to finding out what it is. We don't have many details as we go there, but just stay in touch on the podcast Twitter, on the Camera Twitter, and it'll all be on there.
And in other news, the much-anticipated World Beer Guide by the legendary Roger Protz is finally available to pre-order on the Camera website. It looks really interesting. It covers every region on Earth, so if you were wondering what kind of beer is drunk in different countries around the globe, then you can get hold of a copy by visiting the Camera shop, and Camera members get an extra discount on pre-orders.
I mean, I know I'll be pre-ordering mine very soon. There's no finer person I can think of than Roger Protz. Clearly, you know, every time I read something by Roger, he's been absolutely everywhere on this planet. He's like the David Attenborough of beer. I do remember in some of the pilot episodes, when we call them pilots, it was a failed start to season one, wasn't it, Matt? But I did interview Roger just before the lockdown. I hope to see him again soon. So if you're listening, Roger, thank you for this wonderful book. Now, if you want to save even more money while you're on that little shop online, you can pre-order the Good Beer Guide for next year. The Camera member pre-order price is just £12, and as we all know, it's worth every single penny. This year's edition has a foreword by superstar James Blunt. Not only did he serve in the British Army, he then became a pop star and has also renovated it and now runs the Fox and Pheasant pub in Chelsea. I do wonder if his song You're Beautiful was inspired by his favourite beer.
Oh, it's lovely. I'm tempted to sing, but I won't. You know, got to keep the listeners on side, I always say. So go back to cider harvest time, which it is, that wonderful time of year for cider makers, which I can't say like me, because I'm having a terrible time at the moment. All of my apples got canker. I can't make any cider. So I'm also going to make a personal appeal in the podcast. If anybody does have any spare apples from an orchard, can they get in touch through the Twitter, through the email, and just give me some apples? You know, this is a blatant plug. I've got no apples, guys. I want to make some cider. I've bought a new cider press. I want some apples. But anyway, this week's episode, all about cider, is a little bit different. We've got more interviews, all slightly shorter than usual, giving you a chance to learn more about cider from the experts. Not from me, thank goodness. all very fascinating stuff. And I have to admit, it's making me thirsty for a pint of cider. So we're recording this show later than usual. If you can hear like in the tinkling of cider hitting a glass as in the background, it's we're usually recording this in the morning or an afternoon. No, it's an evening. We can have a cider while we do this. So I think what we're going to do is join you in sitting back listening to some interviews. And first up, we have Jackie Denman of the Big Apple Association, based in Herefordshire, of course. Nothing to do in New York. The real home of the apple. And she is in conversation with none other than Gabe Cook, who you might remember being the subject of an interview about his book, Modern British Cider, in episode one of this series.
Today we are speaking to Jackie Denman from the Big Apple Association in Herefordshire to learn more about the organisation's role in the great cider revival over the course of the last 30 years. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Gabe. It's very nice to be invited.
Could you tell us a little bit about what the Big Apple is, how it started, and what's it all about?
Okay, well, the Big Apple happens in a small corner of Herefordshire. In our part of the world, in our parishes, apples have always been exceptionally important, whether they've been the main crop on a dessert and culinary farm, or whether they've been the main crop for cider producers, or very often a single orchard on a mixed farm that's grown apples to supply to one of the larger cider makers in Herefordshire. In 1989, the idea came to me that you could string a lot of different small things together, all of which were a celebration of the importance of apples to our area, and you could make something bigger than the sum of its parts. So we first had a series of public events in the autumn of 1989. I talked to loads of different organisations and people locally who came up with their own ideas about things that they could do. And in 1989, although there was a lot of cider fruit grown in the area And Westerns, now obviously a much larger business, was a very important cider maker in the area. There was really only one other person making cider, and that was Jean Noel with her husband Terry at Lyne Down.
Now, we can say that the Big Apple was you know, a strong catalyst for the emerging interest in cider making. And I suppose we have to, and we revel in the opportunity to celebrate the role and importance of Jean, who you just mentioned. She was somebody who was really important to me in my cider making and an appreciation journey. And I know that she has been important to lots of different people. What's your take on the, you know, the value and the importance and the role that she had in terms of, you know, bringing the awareness and the joy of this culture and this heritage alive?
She was very, very modest about what she did. She was learning from lots of contacts that she was making, not in the immediate area, but across Herefordshire and into Worcestershire and Shropshire, with quite a few what she would have called old boys who were still making cider in traditional ways. And she loved talking to them and finding out what they were doing. And she developed an informal network of these people. And I think she was a fulcrum, really. She was a fulcrum between that world and the world of people she went on to inspire herself. But in 1989, she was very sceptical that anybody would be interested. she said she was quite happy to open Lyne Down for a weekend, but she didn't think anybody would come. She kind of went along for the ride, really, and was overwhelmed by the public response to what she was doing. And I think the big difference that she made was in gathering together all of the knowledge that she acquired from talking to her old boys, and passing that on to what she can, and then it was still a very male world. She was very unusual at that time, passing it on to what she then called her boys. And quite a few of the cider makers in Herefordshire now would readily acknowledge the part that she played in that, and the Big Apple Absolutely. Just gave a public face to that, really.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Jean appears in the book, in Modern British Cider. You know, I call her one of the key influential figures of the sort of 80s cider revival, one of the elements that really helped to shape what cider is and looks like today. One of the great things about the Big Apple, of course, is the cider trials that takes place normally in every year, not pandemic withstanding. Tell us a little bit about the nature of the cider trials and how they work and why you think they're so special.
This was Jean's idea. Jean was very keen that people who were making cider should first of all get the chance to meet each other and to learn from each other and share ideas with each other and to taste each other's ciders. And she came up with the idea of having a peer judged competition, blind tasting, everybody who entered being able to become a judge themselves. Took a bit of working out in the early days before many computers were involved and it was all done on pencil and paper, a system for doing it. But we worked out a system, and the system hasn't basically changed in the last 30 years. The numbers of people who've entered have grown over that time. And we've had a whole mixture. It's always been a mixture of people who make cider for fun and cider as a commercial activity. And there's no distinction between them in the way that they're judged. Most people who are judging say they frequently can't recognise their own ciders. and Perry's, most importantly, both cider and Perry. And we've been lucky enough to inspire some very healthy competition. I've always called it co-opetition. There's a great sense of camaraderie and rivalry in the cider and Perry trials. It's judged over the course of an afternoon. As the afternoon wears on, the camaraderie increases, but the rivalry comes out when we announce the result.
What are some of the things that you're seeing and observing with cider makers, either within your area or who enter into your competition that makes you excited and gives you faith for the, you know, for the role and the nature of cider and orcharding going into the future?
I certainly think that one of the big things has been whoever is making cider and however they're making it, that the quality of what's being produced, whether it's a hobby maker or a commercial maker, the quality, which is what Jean's hope always was, has been improving and continue to improve. And people really pride themselves on wanting to make the best cider and perry that they are able to. And the knowledge and understanding of how different varieties of cider fruit and perry pears behave has increased hugely. The next thing that's happened, building on that underlying layer of quality and understanding, is a whole new wave of people coming into cider making who are really ambitious and playful about how they use that knowledge.
You must take great pride to see, you know, the impact that the Big Apple has had in terms of really catalysing this.
Yes, I mean, I think we can see a part that we played in that, not least in this part of the world, in being instrumental in the establishment of the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association, which was a really important way of scaling up what we were trying to do at a very local level. And obviously those networks and they're now thriving as an organisation and doing some really interesting things in how they are supporting and informing not only their own members, but obviously creating interest amongst people in other areas who want to know what's going on here.
And for anybody, Jackie, who wants to learn more about the Big Apple, where should they head to? What's the website?
The website is www.bigapple.org.uk. And there are different sections on there for the cider and perry trials, for our harvest time weekend in the middle of October, and for our blossom time weekend at the beginning of May.
That's fantastic. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us. And once again, massive thanks for all of your endeavours and that of the Big Apple for championing fantastic British cider
and
perry.
It's been a great journey, which I've enjoyed enormously.
Yeah, great interview there. If you're interested in finding out more about the Big Apple Association and what they're up to, then their website is bigapple.org.uk. And by the time that this podcast is on air, they'll have just had their Harvest Time Festival. And I love the fact that because it's at 9 different venues, they're running a tractor and trailer service to take people from place to place. What a fantastic idea. Maybe they could just take everyone home afterwards as well.
Yeah, if they've got petrol in the tank, that is.
No, tractors are red diesel, aren't they?
Yeah, they should be all right, yeah. I can't help but when I hear... I'm smirking every time I'm hearing Harvest Time because my eldest son is in school now and he came home the other day with a request for the school harvest, and it just made me smile because I instantly thought of, you know, tinned fruit and really old tins of John West tuna that my mum used to give to me to take to the Harvest Time at school. I was like, well, maybe I should give Henry some cider. This, I wonder how it go down in his school. Maybe not so much give away the cider. But anyway, getting back to the interview, Jean Noah was obviously a huge influence on the world of cider and perry, and it's carrying on with the cider trials, which, you know, I suppose are a bit like sheep trials, except that cider is peer-reviewed, not beer-reviewed. Ha-ha. I thought it's hilarious, though, that people didn't even recognise their own cider. I mean, that's great, right? Mind you, I mean, after a few glasses, it's easy to become confused.
Yeah, but if you're having cider trials, let's hope that the cider gets off at the end of it.
Right. Oh, God. You're on the money there, Claire. I love that. That is fantastic. Now, it's time, everybody, for I'm only here for the cider. No, I'm only here for the beer. It's harvest time. It's got to be cider themed, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a subtle rename. If we had a jingle, we'd have to redo it. But, you know, who has the time? There are a lot of great cider pubs out there, of course. So I want to know from you guys, which ones particularly stand out for you?
Well, I've been looking at the award winners again from the Camera 50th Anniversary Awards. They're giving awards for pubs, pints and people. And in the pubs one, I was looking in Wiltshire, which is kind of southwest, you know, getting into cider territory, or certainly more cider territory than my part of the world. And one of the award winners is the British Lion, which is in... Devizes in Wiltshire, And it calls itself a genuine free house. And if you look at the pictures, and the pictures on the Camera website and on their own website, it just looks like what you'd call a proper pub. They call themselves the last of their kind in the town. It's a pub and that's all. They say no food, whether fancy or plain, no televisions, no sport, no gimmicks, just good beer and cider. They have some of the sort of the what you might call the mainstream, the popular ciders, but they also have the more local ciders, particularly Black Rat is one of the ciders that they have, or Cheddar Valley as well. But you look at the pictures on the various websites, and then you look at it and think that's just a proper pub that you can sit in there with your pint and enjoy the banter. And I can see why it's got one of the Camera Awards.
Yeah, nice. And actually, speaking of awards, my choice is a pub I've not visited, but it is in my local area and has recently cropped up because the presentations from last year's Pub of the Year awards were finally given out over the past couple of weeks. And it was the Sun at Felmersham, not too far from where I am in Bedford, that won the Cider Pub of the Year. So I'm really, really tough for the team there. The pub itself, I've driven past it loads. I've never had the luxury of going in, but that is on the cards in a very, very imminent weekend for me and my family. But yeah, one of those, as you say, Claire, it's another one of those classic pubs that springs to mind. You think of a sort of countryside pub, thatched roof, white walls, really welcoming atmosphere, and you know, just reflecting on you saying about the roaring fire, Matt, you just know that on a sort of chilly evening, go in there and it'd be very welcoming, very intimate. And I can't wait to go and see it. So, firstly, congratulations to the Sun at Felmersham for winning the Real Cider Pub of the Year. And I look forward to coming and seeing you guys very soon.
They sound fantastic. So I've actually looked a little bit further back to an article that was on the Camera website from 2019 where they recommended 10 cider pubs to quench your thirst. And one of them really stood out for me. And it's called the Monkey House in Deford.
Lovely
and it
name.
Says here, and I'll read it, only one of only four traditional cider houses left in the country with no bar to be seen. Oh. And cider served from jugs into china mugs through an opening in the outside wall. I mean, if that doesn't sound like
wow.
Right up my street, traditional cider, I don't know. So I feel like I'm going to look at where it is and I'm going to set off now.
Stay till the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
I'll stay in it. It's a bit late. Actually, we'll be free tonight then. Yeah, you're right.
That sounds like an experience, you know, not just a drink, but the whole china mug, a bit like I'm getting images of the Mad Hatter's tea party for some reason.
It really does sound like the sort of pub that that is deserving of a visit sooner rather than later, I think. But we move on because we have three short interviews with drinks educator Alison Tafts. First of all, she's speaking with Albert Johnson from Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company about the cider harvest, where it sounds like they're ahead of the game, actually, because they've already produced a cider this year.
We grow an eating apple variety on the farm, which is Beauty of Bath. So we've actually already pressed our first cider this year. And I think it will be true for a lot of producers around the country that even though it doesn't yet feel fully like apple season, mostly just feels like a huge monolith slowly creeping towards us, everyone with super early varieties like Beauty of Bath, like Discovery, will have made the first juice of the season.
Oh, fantastic. That must be brilliant. Is there any kind of ceremony that goes with that first juice?
Actually, it's almost the reverse. Because most of our apples are cider apples, they come later in the year. So the Beauty of the Bath is like a ramshackle setup just to get the apple done when it's ripe and we don't lose it. But it's done as quickly and as efficiently as possible so that we can get back on with all the other jobs we're rushing to complete before harvest swamps us completely.
God, that makes complete sense. Yes, I understand. And what does the harvest look like? Are you able to get a sort of handle on how it's going to be yet?
So we always try our best not to worry about it because on the farm we know every year there's going to be enough fruit for what we want to achieve as cider makers because we got into it as apple growers and became cider makers and now we're just makers. So we try not to look at our fruit through the year because then you just get worried every time you have a week of bad weather you think, oh dear, how's that gone for the trees? So I'm not sure. There's every year there's things you celebrate and you think that's going to be good for harvest and there's things you look at and you think that's not so good for the fruit. And you only really know what's gone on when you're actually handing the apples through September, October, November and then you can say, okay, this is what we've learned whilst we're pressing. We can say that it's going to be a relatively big harvest for apples on the farm. We grow our apples in sort of minimal intervention style orchards. So we're not intensively farming them. We don't use pesticides. We don't use fertilizer. We prune by hand. Bird boxes are our main source of pest control. But that means that our trees naturally go biennial. So they have one big year where they produce loads of fruit. And because they're focused on producing all that fruit in the first year, they then don't produce fruit bud for next year. So there's no blossom, you have a small crop. And because there's no blossom and then there's no apples that year, they put all their energy into a huge crop for the year after. So it's a cycle that gets worse and worse all the time, and you just have to lean into it. So we're expecting a very big crop this year on our apples because we didn't have that many last year.
I was going to ask that, how was 2020? So in a way, I guess that was quite helpful that last year wasn't such a big crop because of, you know, things as they were in the world with the pandemic.
Yeah, well, yes. It was fortunate how it fell, definitely, because there was less pressure on us last year to make as much juice as we wanted. But it's always a shame when you have less fruit. And the main thing for us is that it means we have a lot less choices. So in the end, we actually gave it a pretty good go in 2020, trying to find unusual varieties so we could make as many different types of ciders as we could. So we ended up buying in a lot of fruit. Whereas this year, our apples like Stoke Red or Ashton Brown Jersey, some varieties that we only have maybe six trees of, they should have enough for us to make a single variety from them. So there's pluses to having a lot of fruit. And then if you've got less fruit, sometimes it's not as stressful.
Yeah, that makes sense. So in terms of sugars, obviously they will vary depending on the weather, won't they? And how has that been this year?
I think that it's been okay. I mean, for us, if we think back to 3 years ago, the summer of 2018, that was an incredible summer. The weather was just beautiful all the way through June, July, August. It was just screaming with sunshine all summer. And that meant that we had really, really high sugars, which means we have a naturally high alcohol in the cider, naturally more flavour. Last year in 2020, we thought the summer was going to be all right. And then actually, maybe it's not been that, it didn't end up being that spectacular. And I think this year it's kind of similar. We've had weeks, you know, during the Euros, it was beautiful. Everyone was having the time of their lives because the sun was coming down. But then through July, I would say we've been pretty disappointed. But on the other hand, if you get a lot of rain, you end up with bigger apples. So if you don't get the rain, then you might have really nice looking fruit, but you'll be really struggling to get the juice content because the yield will be so low for the weight that you're putting through. This year to me feels like it'll be an average year for average apples, but some varieties, they will have chimed in exactly with this growing season, and so you don't know what they're going to be until you're actually pressing them. But some things will have loved this year and will produce spectacular cider.
Well, Albert sounds very relaxed about everything and clearly isn't easily fazed. Lots of other people, like vine growers, are constantly worrying about the effects of weather and quantity and quality of the crop. So, I mean, they seem to be able to cope with whatever comes along. And I'm sure he said that a big harvest was good, but could also see lots of positives if it was smaller. So that's great, optimistic, half-full thinking.
I'll take some encouragement from that. I say, I know somebody with no apples, there are some negatives to a smaller harvest. But I think, interestingly, said that lots of rain was great for the juice levels, but lots of sun was also great because it increased the sugar levels. And it's interesting, obviously you need the right balance, but it does sound like a bit of a win-win to me. You know, kind of whatever conditions you get can bring a unique thing to the cider. And he makes it a point that it doesn't help to worry about it all through the season anyway. The different apples like different weather, of course, as well. So I guess it all evens out in the end.
And I didn't know that you kind of get a big harvest every other year, but I loved the idea about bird boxes as a form of insecticide, and that really is organic, isn't it?
Yeah,
so we move on now to our second of our three interviews from Alison, and this time she's talking to Lizzie Pegler and Colette Golding from the Orchard Project, and that's all about community orchards.
The Orchard Project is the only national charity dedicated to the creation, restoration and celebration of community orchards. Now, it's that time of year we are focusing on the harvest. And I really wanted to ask you about the harvest that you're dealing with. Where do your apples come from?
So we get the most of our apples from community orchards in London that we support. And we also get apples from people's gardens and allotments who donate their surplus fruit. And then we also did a limited edition food waste cider, which was using surplus apples from farm fruit waste.
Oh, was that the Rambler, Lizzie?
Yes, the Rambler, and we also have the Arlington Mill.
Oh, fantastic. Love that apple. So, yes, yeah, so you're getting quite a variety of apples then coming into you.
Yeah, we were saying this earlier, there's a lot of apples that come in are cookers. There's a lot of urban orchards, especially traditional ones, that were garden kitchens. So there's not so many cider apples in London growing by themselves, but we make it work.
Yeah, so you're really working primarily with eaters and cookers then?
Yeah.
And then you get the odd sort of lovely cider apples to supplement your intake, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a lot of pre-sorting the fruit, trying to keep all the Bramleys to one side just for our fresh juice rather than going into the cider.
I see. Okay, so I was going to ask you actually about the challenges and the obstacles that you have when you're dealing with harvest in the urban environment.
Yeah, so I think probably in terms of the cider, the biggest challenge is it is inherently quite acidic because a lot of the apples you get are eaters and cookers, and yeah, you get a lot of Bramleys, which means a lot of acid. So I think there's probably a bit more pre-work in just trying to sift out, and you know, we just get apples from everywhere, all sorts of varieties. Yeah, just being a little bit mindful in what we put in. And then in the other challenges is just being in London. It's logistics, transport, trying to get around. And people bringing us their apples from their gardens, it just becomes a little bit more challenging when you have to sort of take them on the tube.
Absolutely. So I know you've got quite an innovative way of doing your deliveries with your final product. How are you doing that, Colette?
Well, we send our ciders out by bike, usually. There's a company we use called Pedal Me. And, we get a bike courier come and pick up our ciders and take them to our stockists, on bike, which is... I often feel quite bad for the cyclists loading them up, especially when there's kegs being sent, but they seem to manage, so yeah.
I'm sure they pedal even better if you offer them a sip of cider.
Well, exactly.
And obviously you're working with urban orchards, you're working with garden apples. What do you think is the importance of that, Lizzie?
So trees in general are just really great for the health of us as people, but also for our planet. But for apple trees, I just think, yeah, they're brilliant, especially in urban areas, in providing, you know, really valuable. We know how important green spaces for our health and well-being, so they provide really valuable spaces for people to come together and learn new skills. They're a tree, so they do all the great things about carbon secretion and cleaning our air, but they also provide us with loads of fruit, and they're a really good one. They're quite low intervention. All our sort of the trees in London are in cities, you find them, most of them are organic. They're like a priority habitat, so really, really good for biodiversity.
I was just going to say, I think it's all of that, of course, the environmental factors are really important, but it's also the social factors, for me, that is the most important, especially with the community orchards we work with. Kind of seeing urban food growing as kind of a form of resistance in a way, and creating community around that space, it's something that we've lost, and I think it's something that is really important in our urban communities.
Oh, look at that, Matt. This is right up your street. Fantastic job by the Orchard Project, collecting apples on the tube, delivering by bike. Come on, get yourself over there to Matt's house, folks. He needs your apples. I'd love to see a picture of that cycle courier with a couple of kegs on board. So that glorified stabilisers, isn't it? You know, clearly, so many benefits from ideas like this one in terms of getting the community together and helping people cope with living in the city where you normally cut off from things like orchards and food and drink production. So, you know, if we can spread a bit of that love across the city where it's built up like that, then it's just going to make for some really tasty drinks in the end, isn't it?
It's true. And again, with that mostly organic, low intervention, you know, using apples that otherwise might go to waste, which I think is that's the wonderful thing about cider. As you say, somebody said if they were left to rot and weren't used, we're making a wonderful product out of them. And I think it must be a real challenge for them with so many apples having been grown for cooking and eating and having to turn them into cider. I've had that interest because my cider apples haven't done that well, as I've said. I've just got some Tremblant's Bitter. So I'm looking at now like Bramley's and kind of, you know, dessert apples. I mean, to be honest, in my situation, you start looking at the ones that are in the supermarket thinking, can I just throw in a couple of value Granny Smiths in there? That's how desperate it gets. But, you know, I mean, it's quite a skill to make a cider of the quality that's being made there out of dessert apples and cooking apples. And so I just think I really admire what they do. It's fantastic. Now, for our third short piece, we're going to have Alison speaking with May Turner of Turner's Cider in Kent.
We wanted to have a chat about how things are looking over with the Eastern Counties style cider. So, May, first of all, tell us about your orchards and harvesting in your part of the world.
The orchards are traditional orchards, so they're quite old. They get harvested in a traditional way, which is by hand. So the apples, when they're ripe enough, get picked directly into apple bins, and then those bins are taken then to us and then pressed into juice for making cider. So unlike some cider apple orchards, they don't drop onto the floor and then get scooped up from the floor of the orchard. They're actually picked by hand when they're perfect. So the fruit we use is very high quality because they're not traditionally used for making cider. So they're used traditionally for making, for juicing or for eating. So they're culinary and dessert fruit. So the way we pick them is very gingerly. So when they're ready, they get picked by hand, which makes a fantastically crisp, clean, good quality cider.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. So those apple bins are those wonderful traditional wooden sort of square bins that you see over that part of the world. Yeah, beautiful. Yep. And so I can almost sort of see and smell them in my mind. It sounds delicious. And so you receive these wonderful great big bins with apples. And what happens next? What's been happening this year? Which are the first varieties that you'll be getting?
Discovery is one of the earliest types of apples to be ready. I think actually this season it's already picked and pressed. But actually Turner's doesn't use any Discovery apples. Up to date, we haven't been ready to take a new harvest by this time of year, really. Because our tanks had been not empty enough to take any new apples. So to date, we haven't used Discovery in our blends of cider. The next apple to be ready is normally the Worcester, and that we do use. So for us, it'll be the first fruit. Will be being picked and pressed very soon. The next variety that we use is the Red Windsor, and that will be ready around mid-September. Following that, it'll be the Gala, which again is about mid-September time. We then use Cox, which will be probably slightly later, a bit kind of late September, maybe early October. And then the Russet, which is the kind of key component for our cider, is ready in October. And the orchards where we're based in Marden, that's where we get 80% of our fruit from, and all of the russets that are grown on the site where we are used by us. Following on from the russet, we then have Cheerful Gold, which is actually quite a unique apple grown in our very specific locality. So it's only grown on two farms in the very, very local area where we are. And it is probably going to be in late in October, probably November. So that's the last to be picked and pressed. We also use pears. So we use Conference and Commis pears. So they'll be added in to the pressing schedule. As soon as we're able to get hold of some of those in the local area. So far, the conditions this year have been mixed. We've had late frosts, we've had localised hail damage, There's a lot of small fruit out there, so it's not going to be the best year in terms of the quality, but there is plenty of fruit. So because we're located where we are in the Garden of England, and we're in heavy apple orchard locality, there won't be any problem with the apples. And what we don't get from our own farm, we will be able to find within a 5 mile radius of where we are. So there won't be any problem with that. Sometimes the conditions warrant it. The sugar may be lower than normal this year because of the conditions. But to be honest, that's not normally going to be a problem for us, because generally the orientation of the farm is that lots of the orchards are south facing, so they generally get a lot of sunshine, and they are not, the sugar levels are normally extremely high. So normally our problem is having very, very high ABVs in our cider rather than low ones. So I think if it is going to be lower than normal this year, it's not going to be below 6.5 in terms of ABV, and it won't be a problem for us at all. So, but obviously, depending on the exact sugar levels, we'll have to do our blending accordingly and work out, and tweak the blend, according to how sweet the ciders are, and go from there basically. So it is a challenge every season to tweak the recipe, if you like, so that we can get all the juices in, and try and have some kind of uniformity of product at the end of the day when it has fermented.
Overall, would you say that it's a better harvest or a less good harvest than last year?
I think it's going to be a less good harvest than last year, but it's not going to be terrible. So it's I think they're going to be smaller apples than there were because of the conditions. But I don't think that's going to be a problem. So we can ride our way around that, so it won't be too much of an issue.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of varieties going into that one. Picking and pressing going on from late summer all the way to November. May seemed a bit more concerned, I thought, about the weather than perhaps our other interviewees were, but obviously nothing she can't cope with, and she said it would all be sorted out in the blending.
This episode has been different already, and now in place of our archive dive, we have an eye on L&D. Now, if you don't know the lingo, that's short for Learn and Discover, which is part of the remit for Camera, and and they really want to spread the work and educational resources about ale and cider as far as they can. And this is where Learn and Discover factors that in. Camera regularly shares articles, videos, and lots of other resources for people who want to know about what they're drinking on the L&D platform. And today, we're highlighting the latest cider-based content.
So there's a new video being released on Camera L&D, as the cool kids are calling it. It's called The Story of Perry. And I've talked about Perry quite a bit. It's a little bit one of my special subjects, because I do think it's a bit of a forgotten drink.
Yeah.
And my prediction, its time will come, and I think it will become the hipster trendy drink. It'll have a real period where it is right on top, because it is delicious. And I think there's got so much going for it. It's just a bit of a hidden gem. I think it's with the rise of real cider, lots of people are now going, right, well, what's the next one? What else can I get into? So people are thinking, maybe I'll try its close cousin, the Perry. Just been maybe put off by the kind of overly sweet pear ciders that have come in the past, or things that claim to be Perry and are definitely not. You know, the real stuff is where it's at, and it's an absolutely fantastic drink. I'm getting on my high horse, aren't I, about Perry? But I really do think it's fantastic. So as I said, the video has only just been released, but we asked for a quick summary, and we're told that it's actually a new video series available on Camera's YouTube page to Camera members, and it delves into the rich history and mythos of Perry. We're told to think pagan gods and the creation of the earth, stinking bishop, British Army khaki uniform in World War One, and 300-year-old trees. I mean, that's a heck of a trailer. I'll give him that.
It certainly is. I mean, if that doesn't make you want to tune in, what will?
Well, actually, Claire, I've got more. We've been able to get a sneak peek at just some of the interesting tidbits that you can learn in the story of Perry. For instance, did you know that if you are in sight of Mayhill, then you are in Perry Pear Country?
I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
Did you know, Anne, that the oldest Perry Pear trees are said to have been scattered across the land of three counties by the old gods after they created the earth?
I'm writing all this down. Any more?
Yes, more. Yes, Perry pears are still in use that were planted during the reign of Queen Anne. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah, I need to bank some of these for a pub quiz, I think, because if all that has wet your whistle, then the film is presented by Gabe Cook, who we heard from earlier, of course. It's been filmed and produced by Bill Bradshaw, who's a former head brewer and cider maker, now turned freelance photographer, videographer, and on top of having published 4 books on cider. So if you want to see the trailer, go to the Camera YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe while you're there. There's a link in the show notes, of course. And on Camera's website, there's a whole Learn and Discover section with everything from the basics to cider and beer producer level knowledge.
Wonderful stuff. And with that, we're very nearly at the end of the episode. So, as ever, in true Pubs Pints People style, we're going to call last orders. And it would only be fitting to be talking about ciders. And so I ask to the pair of you, what's been in the glass this week?
As you know, I get my regular mystery box from Scratting's Craft Cider Shop. I would say a fantastic place to get some really out there ciders. I've delved into my box and I've pulled out one of my favourite named ciders. It's called Piglet's Choice.
Ooh.
And it's by the Nempnet Cider Company. And the reason why this took my eye is because it says it's made in a Somerset village called Nempnet Thrubwell, which I feel it sounds like the character in a Dickens novel, doesn't it? My name's Nempnet Thrubwell. And it says traditional medium farmhouse cider. And it is that delicious.
Well, I've been to my favourite, or one of my favourite, real ale and cider shops, which is the Giddy Goat. It's in Sheringham on the Norfolk coast. And whenever I head up to the coast, I always make sure I pop in and see what beers and ciders they've got in. And I haven't actually started this bottle yet because it is 6.8%, in fact. So I'm saving it for perhaps a special occasion, I think. But it's the Windhill Norfolk cider. This is their dry sparkling Norfolk cider. They're based in Wells next to the sea, and it's produced from 100% apple juice, no colouring, water or artificial sweeteners. The apples are a blend of cider and dessert varieties from their own orchards, and they say it gives it a real depth of flavour. It's a dry, full-bodied, lightly sparkling cider, and I'm looking forward to sampling that in the very near future. It does say that on this bottle that the best before end date is August 2022. I don't think there's any danger of of not getting to that.
Now, a little bit like you, Matt, this week I've gone down the subscription route. My very best friend Craig has a subscription to a cider box. I get the beer box. And what we tend to do is we get together and have a bit of a tasting sesh as and when they come in each month. And this one that he shared with me was wonderful. It's by a brewer called Thistley Cross up in Scotland. And they use these real Scottish methods. And this is a cider called Whiskey Cask, so 6.7%. And they use Glenmorray Distillery casks from the old whiskey distillery to give that cider all of the things that you think a whiskey cask barrel would do to that drink. So you get all of the oaky stuff, that nice vanilla and honey tone, and obviously the cider itself is delicious, vegan friendly as most ciders are, because it's all nice and natural. And yeah, Thistley Cross, really impressed with it, and I must say it was delicious.
I think it's a good one, that. I've tried that. Absolute cracker.
Have you?
So you wouldn't really think of like a Scottish cider, you know, obviously the apples would go. But I think, I love like kind of a whiskey cask age cider. I think it gives such depth of flavour, and I think they do it really, really well. It's one of the best out there. So,
yeah.
I salute your box.
I think that's one to go on my list of ones to try before too long.
Yeah, I mean, I checked out the website. They've got loads of different options, and you can buy it by the bottle. You can get the cider boxes as well in your 5-litre and 20-litre polypins. I mean, what's there not to love about it? So, yeah, that's my drink of the week, Thistley Cross. And with that, I'd like to say thanks, everyone, for listening. Next time, it'll be Halloween. So we're going to bring to you some of the tricks and treats of cider and beer producers. And, of course, there are some right horrors waiting for you. So don't forget to tune in next time to Pubs Pints People. Have a wonderful evening, afternoon, morning, whatever time you listen, and we'll see you very soon. Cheers!
Cheers! Have some apples!
I was going to say, shall I dress up as a witch next time? And then you can say, you don't need to. But
Oh, no.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
How does a free case of beer sound?
Yes, you can grab a case for free courtesy of our pals at Beer 52 by going to www.beer52.com/people, that's the numbers 52 in the 52, and covering the meagre postage cost of £5.95. And what's more, as a special offer for our listeners, they'll throw in 2 extra beers for free, so that's 10 unique craft beers.
Beer 52 is actually the biggest beer club in the world. Each month, they send their members a case of beer from a different part of the world, and this month it's an absolute belter. Their great European road trip case takes in the best beers from across the continent.
So try a crisp, refreshing Pilsner from Norway's Lervig Brewery and a monster 7.5 double IPA from Sweden's Durges Brewery. On the dark side this month, there's a smooth stout from Copenhagen's Tuol. There's also beer from Croatia, Poland, Germany, Serbia and Austria, among others.
And if dark beer's not your thing, you can choose the light-only case. Also included is the ever-insightful Ferment magazine and a couple of tasty snacks. And even if, after all that, you're still unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time.
So head over to www.beer52, that's the numbers 5 and 2, .com/people to claim your free case of 10 beers now.